actually are all the way up to 27. 78.27. But let's read the rest of these verses. Okay, the Kumaras are praying to Lord Narayan. And they continue. This is 78.5. Natyantikam vidganayantyapite prasadam pinvanyad arpitabayam bruva unayaiste yenga twadamri sharana bhavatat kataya kirtanyatirta yashashat kushalara sagya kamam bhavaksva vijinayar nirayeshu naksta cheto livad yadinute padayora meta vajas na chanas tulasi vad yaditain grishobat purye tate gunaganayar yadikarna randra padush katarta yadidam puruhuta rupam tene shanir vitimava puralam vishonaha tasmai dam bhagavate nama idvidhema yonatmana duradayo bhagavan pratitaha. Persons who are very expert and most intelligent in understanding things as they are, engage in hearing narrations of your auspicious activities and pastimes, which are worth chanting and worth hearing. Such persons taking shelter at your feet do not care even for your highest benediction, namely liberation, to say nothing of other less important benedictions, which become fearful when you simply raise your eyebrows. O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts can always enjoy, like the bumblebees at your lotus feet. Our words can decorate your feet like tulasi leaves, and our ears can always be filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities. O Lord, we therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your eternal form as the personality of Godhead, which you have so kindly manifested like this before us. Your supreme eternal form cannot be seen by unfortunate, less intelligent persons. But we are so much satisfied in our mind and vision to see it. So those are the verses. Well, let's go ahead now. Those are the prayers offered by the Kumaras. We are in the next file, or the one after it, let's see. 23, 24. We are on paragraph 26. We finished 26? Let's read 26 again. Yeah, we can read it again just to get the context, yeah. Okay, we're going to read 26 again, and then catch up at 27. Tasmad atmaramana ramanasparatvad brahmakyam atmavastveva shri bhagavan tatrapi chakarate sham samshobam akshara jusham abhitita tatvo iti shravanat Tatopi Ganaprakashava. Therefore, inasmuch as the divine personality of Godhead is the object of delight for self-satisfied sages, he is none other than the real self, known as Brahman. But he is even more full a manifestation of the self than Brahman, as we hear in the words, they experienced a change both in mind and body, body and mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Okay, he's even more Gana Prakasha. Gana means thick. He's a thicker manifestation. The person has got it than Brahman. Brahman is thinner. He's more intensely. He's more so the real absolute truth. And that is idea is supported by the experience of the Kumaras. They were already attached. The verse says, Akshara Jushab. They were already had realized. Jushab means to enjoy. So they were already enjoying the bliss of Brahman, Akshara. Akshara, the infallible. The bliss of the infallible, they were already enjoying. Still, they were swayed from that by seeing the Lord and then smelling the tulsi leaves at his feet. Okay, then continuing. Tat tat vichitra shri bhagavad am opam ad abhinivesha darshananda vichitri chopalabhyate. Sa chanyata anupapadya swarupa shakti vilasa rupai veti. We take note of that and also of the note of the fact that the impersonalists were attracted to the personality of Godhead. We take note of that and also of the great variety of ecstasies experienced by the sage, I think that sage is plural, when their sense of sight became involved in the wonders of the various limbs and other parts of the body of the personality of Godhead. Okay, what were they seeing? They were seeing the body of God. We become attracted to a body of the opposite sex. It's just a material body, a lump of flesh. And we're foolish for being attracted to it. But in this case, they're attracted to a body and with bodily parts, but it happens to be a transcendental body of Lord Narayan. And that's very appropriate attraction. Even though it's just a body with different limbs and other parts. Now, these wonders of his various limbs and other parts of his body, these must be manifestations of the play of his internal energy. It's not just lumps of flesh, but manifestations of the play of the Lord's internal energy. That's something to be attracted to. And we can assume that because nothing else can explain the given facts. This is the logic called Anyata Anupapati. We studied this. It was a long time ago, before the school was actually organized. When we were having classes in my house, we studied Nyaya for a couple of, or 2 months. But I think we've discussed this before. Anyata Anupapati. What is it? Yeah, could you explain what it is? Okay, that's not straightforward logic. It's presumption. You know, logically it's a little complicated. It's not just all A's or B's and he's an A, therefore he's a B. But it's a little more complicated. He's eating at night because he's not eating during the day, and you gotta eat either in the day or the night, so it's not one, it's the other. It's a little bit complicated logic. It's called something deduction. We have two alternatives, and it's not one that has to be the other. The term in Sanskrit is anyata anupapati. What we know as a fact doesn't make sense unless we make an assumption. Unless we assume he's eating at night, we can't explain how he's fat because we know he's not eating during the day. So, unless the body of Narayan was a play of the Lord's internal energy, we can't explain how these self-satisfied sages got up so excited seeing it. There's no other way to explain it. That's the way we know that it must be a play. This bodily form must be a play of the Lord's internal energy. Okay. Well, we didn't reach the end of the paragraph yet. Let's just get to the end of the paragraph. Go ahead. Yeah.
Because we're up to, and then the, now we have an objection raised, so we'll stop at this point. Go ahead.
You mentioned that God's body is a manifestation of his eternal energy, of the eternal energy.
Yeah.
From what I understand, the Lord is the energetic and he possesses the energy. So, how can we understand that it's manifested from the eternal energy?
Well, it's not, see, the spiritual cause and effect is not restricted by time. In the material world, there's a law of metaphysics, you know, of logic, that a cause has to be there before the result, product. You can't have a product existing before the cause is there, exists. The cause comes first. It's a definition in the Nyaya school of cause. A cause must exist before the product. But that's not the case in the spiritual world. Everything's eternal. So there is no necessity of something being before something else. The Lord is the source of his own body and of his own energies. And his energies are the source of his body. But it's not like one has to be before the other. They're all simultaneous. He's the ultimate cause. The complete cause, but there are causes acting on his behalf, the secondary causes. His energies are secondary causes, because he's the original cause. He's self-sufficient. He didn't even depend on his own energies, but he lets them be his agents. And so they manifest his body, even though the body's eternal. It's not like he had to walk around without a body, waiting for one. Now his body's eternal. But they're manifested by his body is manifested by his energies. Well, that's what Jiva Goswami is saying here. Yeah. Yes.
Is it Krishna's body below this?
Well, the Sandini Shakti, which is ruled over by Lord Balaram, manifests everything in the spiritual world, including Krishna's body. I think Prabhupada must be saying something just like that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, at least. What's the difficulty?
Difficult to understand this statement. Because generally we see Krishna and his body are not different. And Krishna has energies. He is a Shaktiman.
Well, let's say like this. His energies make him visible. He's there. But the fact that anybody can see him is arranged by his energies.
Like we don't say source of Krishna is the energy. So why would
you
differentiate the body is
produced? The body is the same and different. The body of Krishna is the same, but I see what you mean. There's no difference between Krishna and his body.
Yeah. So how can you say that?
But Krishna has varieties. His bodily appearance, his having a body, his body is one of those varieties. His activities is another variety, or a whole, you know, category of variety. And his, what he thinks in his mind, he feels in his heart, those are other varieties of the personal absolute truth. They're not different from him, but they're visheshas, they're varieties. And we, not that we say they're created, they're not created. So we don't say they're created by his energies. But they're manifested by his energies. They're made perceivable by his energies. Well, let's see exactly what Jiva Goswami said about this. Let's make sure we got it right. This is in 27 still, or 26? 36. The words are... Swarupa Shakti Vilasa Rupaiva. Now, let's see, Sa is feminine. So actually, look at this. Sa is the, yeah, that's something else. Sa, what is a play of his internal energy is the variety of ecstasies that they experienced. That's not his body. Okay, I read it wrong. I read it wrong here. It doesn't say that the body is a manifestation of the play of his internal energy. Mm-hmm. It says that the ecstasy, the variety of ecstasies they experienced is a manifestation. That's a complete mistake on my part. Okay, so here, at least in this sentence, Jiva Goswami is not saying, yeah, he's not saying in this sentence that the body is manifested by his energies. Or the body, you know, anything about that. He's talking not about the body, but about the ecstasies, the state that the Kumaras were experiencing. I don't know, we may have that same problem somewhere else, but it's not here.
Yeah, Prabhupada says that Krishna's body is manifested of his energies.
He does. Can we find a statement such? Okay, maybe it will hold us up too much to start digging into the folio right now. Maybe, could somebody do this as homework? Okay, give us a report tomorrow about whether Prabhupada or anybody, Jiva Goswami, anybody says this, that this body, Krishna's body is manifested by his energies. Okay, because I misread here that this sentence was saying that. But maybe I got the idea because it is said somewhere else. Yes.
Just remembering, and also just in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says that there's this unusual statement that Krishna is not so beautiful without his energies.
Krishna is not so beautiful without his energies.
Something like that.
Okay. Well, that doesn't say that Krishna's body is created, it just means that he's more beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but let's try to get from Prabhupada exactly what he's saying and get it right. So could you look, you could research it. Okay, thank you. Yes. They've assumed separate bodies. But it's not that they, you know, they were Siamese twins and split up at a certain time. They always were two separate bodies.
We cannot trace some particular point in time that was a mountain and the one in the tooth and it became.
Yes, hermaphroditic Bhagavad became no.
Just Krishna, he has a particular desire to enjoy. He made these two horses and one more. So.
Yeah. Okay. But let's try to find out.
Yes. My concern is that if I'm right, we say that in the hierarchy, the energetic is higher than the energy. And
yes.
And this is the case. Then
how can the energy? Also, how can the energy create the energetic?
Yeah. But
doesn't. Yeah.
And at the same time, we also agree that Krishna is energetic. And his body are not different.
Yeah, so the body is energetic, not energy.
Yeah. So that means, we can, how can we say that, that energy is, you know, the source of that energy?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. First of all, let's find out for tomorrow morning whether it said, whether Prabhupada ever said that. You know, in those, exactly like that, that his body is made by his energies. Yes. Made visible by his energies is a different thing. Or if anybody wants to look back at the earlier part that we've read of this second Sandarbha, if you can find a statement in here in the Bhagavad Sandarbha to that effect. Yeah, I mean, it's, there are also statements that Krishna's Brahma prays Swechamayasya Natabhutamayasya, that the Lord assumes his various pastime forms to fulfill the devotee's desires. That the bodies are caused by the desires of the devotees. But they're eternal. Appears in those forms. Right, but those, like he's appears means that he makes, he descends in an avatar and it's an eternal form, it's an already available existing form that appears at a certain time to fulfill certain desires of certain devotees in a certain place. But that form that descended or existed beforehand was eternal in the spiritual world. So it's not like the avatars are created by the desires of the devotees, but the forms of the Lord that already exist manifest according to the desires of the devotees. So that still doesn't solve the question. Anyway, let's just go. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Like we say that our body is a product of our desire. Like what we are thinking now, that thought
should create another body first. Because yes. We and the body are different. Yes. Body, Krishna and his self, body and his self are not different. So are we also putting that into the something like this? Well, if we take it too literally that Krishna's body is created by his or someone else's desire, yeah. That would try to make the creation of Krishna's body the same kind of material creation that our body. But I don't think we're taking it literally like that. Like we said, it just means that the body that already exists shows itself to devotees who want to see it at a particular time and place. It's talking about the exhibition of the body that already exists. Anyway, we'll just continue this discussion on the question on this question tomorrow after we do our research. Okay, let's pick it up from this Purvapaksha question that's asked by a doubtful person. Nanu, Bhavatu, Tesham Anand Adi Kyat, Tasmin Nirvishesha Swarupanandasyaiva Gana Prakashata, Upadi. Vaishishtyat. Let us grant a doubtful person, Zamayavani, may say that because their, that means the Kumaras, their ecstasy was so great, the bliss inherent in the non-differentiated reality of the self assumed a concrete visible form as Lord Narayan by their imagining special features in it. See, they're self-realized. They're not just some sentimental bhaktas. Yeah.
fantasizing about their deity. They're actually self-realized Brahman, you know, Brahmavadis. But they were, this is an effect of their extreme ecstasy, that they started imagining that the Brahman had become a person. This is Mayavadi's slant on it. That it's just their imagination that Brahman is a person, became a person. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyate mama buddha. Less intelligent thing. I'm really impersonal, but I assume personality. Okay. So it says that because their ecstasy was so great, the bliss inherent in the non-differentiated reality of the self assumed a concrete, visible form in Lord Narayan by their imagining special features in it, in Brahma. Yato Vishuddha Sattvamsha Bhavitaya Chitta Vrittau Yad Brahma Spurati Tareva Gani Bhut Akonda Vishuddha Sattva Maye Bhagavati Spurad Tad Adyastataya Tadaikyam Apanayam Tasyam Visheshita Eva Spurati. Indeed, Brahman appears, this is the Mayavadi talking, indeed, Brahman appears in the thoughts of a mind which has become imbued with a portion of the pure mode of goodness. And it appears in a very distinct form in a mind that has become one with Brahman. By the manifest reflection of Brahman upon the personality of Godhead, who embodies concretely the unlimited totality of pure goodness. Now this is complicated. This is Mayavadi talk. Everything's one. So what are, you know, why should they be talking about some separate person having a separate realization of Brahman? But they have to explain it because that's what their whole process is about how a separate person realizes Brahman. So they have to describe this procedure of how a jiva realizes Brahman. I mean, he is Brahman, but how does he get from being a jiva to getting back to being Brahman? What actual steps does he have to go through? So this is how they describe it. Jiva has a mind. He's an individual soul with an individual mind because of his conditioned nature, being covered by illusion. He's got thoughts in his mind, but then the pure mode of goodness comes along and hits him on the head, and his thoughts are now imbued by pure good, you know, just affected by, influenced by pure goodness. What happens then? He thinks about the personality of Godhead. The mode of goodness makes you conceive of Brahman as a person. People in the mode of goodness think that the Brahman is a person, the Supreme is a person. Because what is the personality of Godhead? He's illusion. You know, any person is illusion. But he's the supreme illusion. When the whole of Brahman, not just a piece of it, is covered over by pure goodness, by goodness and nothing else, no passion, no ignorance, then the whole, when you cover up the whole Brahman with goodness, then you get Bhagavan, according to the Mayavadis. When you cover up a little piece, then you get, by goodness, you get a jiva, you get jivas. And when you cover up pieces of Brahman by ignorance, then you get matter. So it's natural that if your mind gets covered by mode of goodness completely, then you'll think about Bhagavan. It's a natural step toward self-realization. It's not the final perfection, but it's on the way to be thinking about God. So it's natural. These four kumaras, Vaikuntha is a place full of goodness, and they happened to walk into Vaikuntha. They got hit on the head by the mode of goodness and started fantasizing about Narayana. Even though they're good Mayavadis, they're good Brahman, perfect Brahman realized sages, what business do they have,
Vaikuntha getting hit over the head like that. Anyway, it happened, and they started having their hallucinations about Lord Narayan just being in front of them. Or, you know, actually start, they're talking about him being Brahman itself and this and that. So that's just their ecstasy. And they happen to be in Vaikuntha, and they're getting influenced by Mother Goodness. Yes? Well, I might argue, yeah, what are you doing, you know, becoming devotees? You're good personalists, what are you doing? Yeah, singing, dancing, what are you fooling around for?
But then the next question is, how this ecstasy, which they experience it, how this ecstasy would be more intense than what they imagined or what they felt before?
Well, I think that's part of the answer. I think that's how we reply to it. Yeah. You say that the Brahman realization is more real than the Bhagavan realization, but why is the experience more ecstatic of Brahman realization?
Who
was it? Fell down from that, yeah. Oh. And therefore, Menaka is a higher reality than Brahman. But I think it's part of our argument. It's one good reason why evidence, not a total argument, but it's part of the argument. Why Bhagavan is more complete than Brahman. Anyway, let's see. Let's we even got to the end of the objection first. Let's let the Mayavadi talk, and then we'll see what Jiva Goswami answers. Okay, let's see. Okay, Ata Eva, Sri Vigrahadi Para Brahmanor. Vedavakyam api tadatyanta tadatmya patyapekshayayava. Therefore, thus, when statements are presented proposing the non-difference of the personality of Godhead's divine form and the Supreme Brahman. Yeah, why would it be said that Brahman and Bhagavan are the same when you Mayavadis see a difference? So what does it mean? The statements that say that Bhagavan is Brahman. What is being described is the unavoidable fact that the personality of Godhead is altogether dependent on Brahman as the source of his existence. That's what the Mayavadi says. If somebody says, scripture tells us, Brahman and Bhagavan are one, that only means that Bhagavan comes from Brahman and is dependent on Brahman. Or as Krishna says in the Gita, Brahmanohi Pratishtaha. And you take, as Shankaracharya does, Brahmano to be Panchamiva Bhakti. I am established from Brahman. Brahmano hi pratishtaha. You know the verse? Yeah, Brahmanaha. Brahmano hi pratishtaha. But Shankaracharya reads it to mean, I am established from Brahman. Panchami, Brahmano. It can be Panchami or Shashti. Okay? The Mayavadi's still talking. He's got more to say. Ata eva tatra upadav eka eva nirbeda paramanandam samupalabhyate natu vishesh akara gandopi. In whatever imposed conceptions the sages encountered, therefore, it was only the supreme ecstasy of non-duality they perceived, not even a trace of varied form. They're self-realized. They're not going to fall back into Maya. So they didn't see any duality. And ecstasy, you know, made this hallucination, not hallucination, but this mirage of Narayan. But actually, they never fell down from their Brahman realization. All they continued seeing was just non-duality, the supreme ecstasy of non-duality. Not even a trace of variant form. Okay. Well, yeah, but weren't they seeing Narayan? So the answer is, tad-tadupadir apekshanam tu pratipada tadananda samadhi gata kautika nibandhanam. Whatever regard they paid to certain imposed conceptions, in other words, they were blissfully offering prayers to Narayan and looking at him. That's their regard they paid to certain imposed conceptions, like the conception of a personal god, Narayan, was only an effect of the curious delight they experienced at every moment in their trance of ecstatic meditation. So they're meditating on formless Brahman, and in their ecstasy, they're pretending to worship Narayan. Okay, that's the claim here. Tasmat katam anena pramanina tad tadupadina api paratattva karatvam sajite iti. So how, the Mayavadi asks, how is it proven on this evidence that these various imposed conceptions were real manifestations of the absolute truth? Just imposed conceptions, duality. Narayan's body that they were looking at is just duality. How can you say that that's a real manifestation of the absolute truth? They were just offering prayers. That was just a symptom of their ecstasy, but they didn't really mean it. Okay. That we'll have to see in 7827 the answer starts. But first let's read commentary, if you can wait a minute to get the answer. The commentary is here. Self-satisfied sages want the absolute truth and nothing else. But the best of them are attracted by the personality of Godhead. Therefore, the personality of Godhead must be the absolute truth. Moreover, he is full of variety. Material energy cannot create this variety in him. Therefore, he must have his spiritual energies. Of course, then you say, why does his variety have to get created by anything? But anyway, the variety is manifested by his energies. Without energies, he doesn't have any variety. Impersonalists of the Mayavad school, and his body is part of his variety. Yeah, so I don't know how you could argue that no, without his internal energy, he doesn't have a body. If he didn't have any internal energy, he wouldn't have a body, just like Brahman doesn't have a body. Anyway, I'm sorry. Impersonalists of the Mayavad school cannot understand this. They interpret the facts otherwise. As they see it, the personality of Godhead is another illusion, although a special one. They take it as self-evident that Brahman alone is absolutely real. Nothing else exists separately. All duality expands from Brahman by imposition of upadis, imaginary features. Ordinary persons are created by finite upadis, and the supreme person is created by an infinite one. The supreme person, upadi, we're translating as imaginary features. And the supreme person is created by an infinite imaginary feature, upadi. For a person approaching the success of self-realization, Brahman begins to reveal itself in the person's finite consciousness. So he isn't fully self-realized yet. He still thinks he's a finite jiva. And in that finite consciousness, Brahman begins to reveal itself. It is convenient for these partially self-realized persons to meditate on God as a person, who is a projection of Brahman onto the totality of the pure material mode of goodness. Not pure spiritual goodness, pure material goodness. The Mayavadis don't recognize spiritual energies. Spiritual means no energy, as far as they're concerned. Thus, according to this theory, the Kumaras were actually fully attached to the impersonal Supreme, and only pretending to be attracted to the illusory duality, only pretending to be attracted to the illusory duality of the personality of Godhead. Lord Narayan is just a reflected substitute for the Supreme. Many varieties of upadis can be superimposed on Brahman. The personality of Godhead thus has a body with various varied limbs and other features, because he's an illusion. And there are various ideas of who God is. Some think he's Vishnu, some Shiva, some Durga, some Surya, some Ganesh. It does not matter which one prefers, since none of them are in fact the pure Supreme. Okay, we better not leave it at that. That's the Mayavadi argument. This is answered. Uchyate. Bhavanmate tavad yat shuddha chitta vrittau parabrahma spuriti tat samyageva spuriti. This we answer. We Vaishnavas answer. In your opinion, the Supreme Brahman, which reflects in the functions of pure consciousness, reflects completely. Now, just a portion, when Brahman is reflecting as Bhagavan, it's a complete reflection, not a partial reflection. Bedamsha lesha parityagena eva brahma vidya tvam hi karada samgyanasya tatvam nam hi karat tena kaivalya asambhava cha. After all, you acknowledge, you Mayavadis, that only by abandoning the slightest trace of duality can meditation on Brahman be realized. And you reject the factuality of incomplete knowledge because it cannot lead to oneness with the Supreme. Therefore, it is ato na shri vigraha dav adi kavir bhav angikaro yujite. Therefore, it is not appropriate for you, Mayavadis, to accept that something additional is manifested in the divine body and bodily form and other features of the personality of Godhead. Okay, the idea is, Mayavadis is saying that they're pretending, or they're talking about Brahma, Bhagavan, they're talking about Narayana, but they're really thinking about Brahma. But then you're imposing something else on top of Narayan. That Narayan, when Narayan is appearing, it's actually something else beside Narayan. It's really Brahma that they're seeing. But Brahma can only be realized by complete knowledge, not by incomplete knowledge. So they're, if they saw Brahma in Narayan, then they must have had complete knowledge, not incomplete knowledge. And the way the Mayavadi is presenting it is that they had only incomplete knowledge, that they were perceiving an illusion, not the reality. That they saw, on the surface, they saw the personal body of Narayan, but full realization is that it's actually just Brahman. If that was so, then their realization of Bhagavan would be incomplete and they wouldn't be Brahman realized. They'd be Maya realized, that's all. If Narayan is Maya, then all they'd be seeing was Maya. They wouldn't be seeing Brahman. Okay. Any questions on that? That may be confusing. So confusing, there's no questions.
It's a bit confusing, this part.
Yeah, so let's try to clarify it.
Adil, I think you mentioned, please correct me if I'm wrong. You said that the four Kumaras were completely self-realized.
Yeah. Yeah, right. They were, and nobody's arguing, nobody's disagreeing about that. Yeah. Mayavadis also think they were completely self-realized.
So then we have the fact that they saw Lord Narayan.
Right, which We're all agreeing on that, because the book tells us that.
Yeah. The while they say, the fact that they saw Lord Narayan means they become somewhat less self-realized, because...
They don't say that they became less self-realized, but in their ecstasy, they were pretending to realize Narayan. They were pretending to give their attention to the personality of Godhead. Pretending. Because they shouldn't be interested in anything else at this point, anything else than pure Brahman. So they're just like, a person jumps and shouts when he's in ecstasy. So they're just displaying their ecstasy by pretending to be interested in Narayan.
But he said, what a goodness there.
Yeah, that was one statement. There was some talk about that, yeah. Because the personality of Godhead manifests in the mode of goodness, especially when there's complete manifestation of the mode of goodness. That causes, that creates Narayan.
Do some research can give us a presentation of overall view of what exactly, because we are reading and trying to think of this class.
Overview of what?
This particular verse or this particular topic, can you have some kind of 2-3 classes or prepared or something?
But what other than what's being said here? What else are we talking about?
I think all of us are different levels of certain concepts. We cannot be aware before.
You want a basic background on the Mayavadi philosophy?
Yeah, maybe like what is Upadhyaya, different things, because otherwise we ask so many questions.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm
properly prepared to do that right away, to give a short, maybe one day seminar on Mayavadi philosophy, because I did that. I did do it back in America. I gave a 2-week class on Mayavadi philosophy at Kita Nagari, but that was years ago. I don't have all that material with me.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I directly studied the Mayavadi presentation. So I'd have to go back and restudy it before I could tell you the whole story. That's why I'm getting a little confused here myself, because it's been a while since I've studied this.
Yeah, I remember that maybe you can read it before you can give us a system.
Well, okay, but I don't even have the materials to read with me. I'd have to dig them up.
I'm saying this one, this verse itself.
Which?
This topic in the Sandarbha, Bhagavad Sandarbha itself. These 2, 3, 5, 6 anuchetas, because that
you mean I should go through them and put together my ideas about what it means, yeah.
Kind of comprehensive understanding.
Yeah, okay. I'll sit down and study this whole 78th anucheta. How's that? And then
give us
an overview, yeah, but let me, of course, we just came back from vacation and I couldn't remember where we were as what to speak of what I was talking about, so let me sit down and study the other chain and try to get to piece together a coherent picture of what's going on. Okay, I'll do that. Yeah, we're getting a little confused here. So let me study up this is a long other chain. Let me study the whole other chain carefully, and I'll give you a summary of what it's about after I figure it out. So what we're doing? Stop for now, and then. Got a lot of things to do, but I'll add that to my homework list. Okay, I'll try. I may not have it all together by tomorrow, but maybe the day after tomorrow I'll get that. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Guruji, in previous classes we have told that some incarnations of Lord don't have merits like Mahi-Bhuti. Regarding some people's question.
Yeah, some incarnations don't have what?
Their planets in like planets.
They don't have their own planets.
Like you gave example of Mahi-Bhuti.
Oh, well, I've heard that from Prabhupada. And also, I think it's Prabhupada gets it from the Laghu Bhagavatam of Guru Goswami. Some incarnations are not eternal. They don't have their own place in Vaikuntha. They're just ad hoc, part-time incarnations. They're just, you know, they don't exist eternally, but the Lord just, you know, makes a show of something. Because one thing that Prabhupada told us is that the Supreme Lord never takes a female body, never. There is no real female form of the Supreme Lord. That was sort of make-believe, a show. So Mohini Murti is not an eternal form because God never actually takes a female body.
Yeah,
so it's just Narayan dressed up like a lady. Yeah, it's not actually a lady. There is no Mohini Murti, in other words.
So actually, Sarangipur was asking a question that if devotee wants to desire to see a certain form, then God appears like, what the?
Well, not just any devotee. I mean, it's got to be.
No, no. But Shiva desired to see the form. We may not desire.
No, no, but Mohini Murti appeared first, had her pastimes, and after the pastime, he wanted to have a vision.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it didn't. That the pastime happened because he had the desire. It's just, you know, when Krishna does anything, there can be many reasons for it. There are many purposes served by everything Krishna does, and also there can be many apparent causes of why he does something. But it's not exclusive. Krishna can appear because a devotee has a particular desire, but he may also have other reasons for appearing at the same time, and they don't contradict. In material world, you have multiple causes of things. You know, same thing, one thing has many causes, but the clay pot, the clay is one of the causes. The potter, the man who makes it, is one of the causes. The wheel that he spins, the machine he uses, is one of the causes. There are several causes for one thing, even in the material existence. So the Lord, the devotee's desire is one of the causes, not the only one, of the Lord's appearing in a certain form. Yes? No, I think it's like Vishnu in disguise. It's Vishnu, but he's not a lady. He's not actually female. Like if Krishna comes and he takes the peacock feather off his head and puts a different feather on his head, that's not a different avatar. He's just changing his dress. So if Narayan appears and then shows himself as Mohini Murti, that's not necessarily a separate avatar, it's just the Lord changing his dress.
For example, in the case of Krishna, no program, it's also different only in the color.
Well, not only, they're actually, the Balarama is a special expansion. It's not just Krishna goes, you know, behind the scenes and changes his dhoti and comes out as Balarama, because they're both there at the same time. Yeah. So they're actually two separate features, two separate forms. Okay. Yes, could. But we have to somehow explain what it means that. First of all, she doesn't have her own planet. It's, I think, described as a temporary avatar, not eternal, and the Lord doesn't take a female body. We have to explain all those. Gopu Kumar went to through the coverings of the universe on his way to Vaikuntha. And the last covering was the covering of Prakriti. And Durga Devi was there, worshipping Mohini Murti. And I don't know which one invited him to stay there. It was Mohini Murti or Durga that invited Gopakumar to stay there for a while. Why don't you stay with us? We'll help you worship Narayan. You're looking for Narayan, we'll help you worship him. But he declined. He offered his respects and said, no, I'm sorry, I got an appointment in Vaikuntha, I have to go. So he didn't take the opportunity to stay and worship Mohini Murti. He didn't think it was a good idea. Yeah, and also Lord Chaitanya, it's in Chaitanya Bhagavad, he was going to put on a dance, you know, he's going to do a dance as Prakriti, as Lakshmi, but actually Durga. He's going to appear as Maya. And he told only those who are completely free from sex desire should come and watch the performance. And so both Advaitacharya and Srivas Thakur were very depressed. They thought, oh, we better not go. We're householders. Yeah. But actually what happened, you know, Lord Chaitanya put on the performance and everybody, you know, all the devotees were able to go and watch the performance. Nobody got agitated. Okay. Hare Krishna. All right, well, give me a day or two. I'll try to figure out this anuchet. Hey, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.